What is going on with Ford Australia? We're about to do a bit of a deep dive into Ford and find out why they can't seem to sell any other models apart from the Everest and the Ranger Ute in Australia. Plus, we've got some piping hot breaking news for you as well, so stick around. Hello and welcome to the Cars Guide podcast. My name is Tim Nicholson. I am Cars Guide Senior Editor. I am filling in for the wonderful James Cleary for another week. He is on a car launch, which I'm sure he'll be talking about next week, but he'll be back in the chair on Friday. Until then, I'm joined by two of our incredible contributors. I'm talking, of course, about Stephen Otley and Byron Matthew-Darkus. Gentlemen, welcome.
Thanks, Tim. Always a pleasure.
Thanks, Tom. Always a pleasure.
Great to see some of you here. Otley, how's your week been?
Great, yeah. Just driving cars and writing about cars. It's basically the same as the week before that and the week before that.
For the last, you are literally living the dream.
20 years. Yeah.
Byron, how about you? Busy one?
You know, it's the busy time of the year, really, isn't it? I mean, there's lots of new launches, lots of catch-up over the last couple of years in terms of new model releases, as well as you said, breaking news here and there and everywhere.
It is all happening. Well, I think on that note, we should probably just dive right in because we've got a lot to get through. It's a big topic, and we'd love to hear from you. Please comment as the show is going live right now. We'd love to hear any questions you've got or any comments. Particularly about how stunning I look. That would be great. But look, let's jump right in. Ford has got a long history in Australia. You two are both incredibly familiar with that manufacturing and, you know, continuing on well beyond Holden, obviously, who have left us. They obviously not as popular a brand as they once were. I think they were number one at different points in their history. Now they're sitting just outside the top five. And, you know, there's a massive reliance on a couple of models being the Ranger and Everest. So I want to touch on that, but very quickly in relation to that, Stephen Otley, some hot tea from Ford that's just lobbed. What's the news?
Well, yeah, the news is, you'd call it a shock announcement. They are getting rid of the Fiesta ST and the Focus ST. Which is particularly shocking given they're both new models. They're both almost just landed in showrooms and now they're just landed in the scrap bin, you know. They're like getting them out of there as quickly as they come in, I imagine. Yeah. So, you know, Ford's official reason is lack of supply. You know, the semiconductor shortage is, you know, continues to be an issue. But I mean, I think reading between the lines and just looking at it, I mean, you've got to think a lack of demand is also an issue. But it's disappointing, you know, like they were never going to be, you know, like Ford's already got rid of every other Focus and Fiestas. They specifically just left the hot hatch variants. So you can't expect them to sell 10,000 a year. So to then sort of turn around and go, well, they don't sell that many and we can't get many more. So we'll just get rid of it. Like it's just yet another sort of bloat. If you're a real like, blue blood, if you really love Ford, it's another sort of, you know, kick in the backside.
It really is. Byron, what do you think that means for the brand?
Look, I think it's absolutely myopic for Ford to drop. They are hot hatch icons. Like they really are. Ford had a hot hatch style small car well before, you know, that Volkswagen cliche GTI thing, because you know, you go back to the Escort Mexico and the earlier Escort RSs, which was the Focus predecessor globally. Mm. In Australia, we used to have the Laser Sport and the Laser TX3, models like that. Ford has always had a sideline of interesting, affordable performance cars. Mm. And for them to abandon this, because this is what they've done, as wholesale as they have, just chopping off the Fiesta ST and the Focus ST lines is really an end of an era. I think it's a slap in the face for enthusiasts. If I had a black armband or a headband, I'd be wearing it.
That is dramatic, but appropriate.
Not look, being, yeah. Do you guys agree? Like,
yeah, look, I think the reality is they're brand building cars. They're not volume cars, and you know, I mean, as we're about to discuss, maybe it is on brand for Ford to do this because, I mean, it's just, I think the other thing to temper it, because I do agree with Byron, it is super disappointing as an enthusiast who enjoys those cars. Mm. You know, the Fiesta ST, I personally have felt the Fiesta ST has probably been the best hot hatch on the market since the previous generation. Like it was just it was simple, but great. Like that's what made it so good. And I think now to lose that is really disappointing. But like I say, to temper it, I think the reality is the writing is on the wall for those cars anyway. I think Ford globally and Ford Europe, which I guess looks after them, you know, they don't see much of a future in them. So, which is again, you know, maybe Ford's more on the leading edge here, because I think if you talk to people within industry, you know, small cars are an endangered species. But it's still disappointing. The timing is strange, and it's bad news. So
I just hope that they or Ford brings in, say, the Puma ST, which is that could at least have, you know, brought that to us as a compensation thing, you know.
Just to keep the brand relevant. Like you say, they've had compact performance cars for a very long time. Mm. And the market's evolving. So why don't you evolve with it? And give us something else.
I agree. I just want to say also that this is not only the end of an era, it's more than that. Ford has had small cars available in Australia since the 1920s continuously. Now, of course, you can argue the Puma ST is a small car, but it's a small crossover / SUV. The Fiesta only started in Australia in 2004, but it replaced the Festiva, which wasn't a great car, but it was still an affordable light car. While the Escort, the Focus and the Light goes back to the Laser, which goes back to the Escort, which goes back to the Anglia, which goes back to the Model Y. Those are cars that were released pre-war cars, continuously available in Australia. It all ends today with that announcement. So,
and Byron knows that because he was born pre-war. So that's how we can get that straight from the horse's mouth.
How unkind.
I know. I mean, but look,
more tragedy.
I just reviewed the Fiesta ST. So if you go to carsguide.com.au right now, you can find my review of that car, the 2023 facelifted version. And oddly to what you're saying, like that was just one of my favorite cars I've driven in the last couple of years, as was the pre-facelift one when I drove that. And it's, you know, I would put my own money down for this car. It's a real disappointment, but as you say, it kind of goes to a wider discussion, which we'll get into right now. Otley, you've written a story on this, as Byron has as well, that went live last week, talking about that issue of Ford relying too heavily on those cars. So what do you think the problem is with that, relying on those two, the Ranger and Everest?
Well, I guess if I knew the answer to that question, I'd probably go and apply for Andrew Berkick's job as president and CEO. Look, I think really the story was sort of looking at, and the real question around Ford is, you know, which today's announcement only amplifies, is what else can they do? They have to do something else because, you know, they say in their own reason for, you know, Fiesta and Focus going is because there's issues with semiconductors and there's issues with supply. The Ford Australia is one, you know, semiconductor shortage, you know, a bad month for semiconductors or shipping. You know, the global supply chain crisis is still a crisis. They're one bad month away. If they don't get a boatload of Rangers, they don't get a boatload of cars. You know, they'll halve their sales. I mean, they are more than half their sales. I looked at it. So for the first 6 months of the year, so half a year sales, 86% of Fords sold were Ranger or Everest. Without Ranger or Everest, they sold less than 4,000 cars. That is behind brands like LDV, you know, like that's it. So yes, with Ranger, obviously that's you're taking Ranger out of it is a huge thing. You know, it's probably not going to disappear overnight. But without that, you know, that's the context that the Ford Motor Company is in. You know, the Ford Ranger Company is in great health, but the Ford Motor Company without Ranger is a huge question mark. You know, like Honda has had, you know, lots of, you know, stones thrown at it over the last 18 months, changing their dealer structure, changing the way they sell cars. They've still sold over 7,000 cars. And the same time that Ford, like I say, you know, imagine in a scenario where they don't have Ranger and Everest, outsold, but like sold less than half of what Honda did. So it's just an example of this reliance on one particular platform. You know, the Ranger and Everest, they're basically the same, you know, they're tied together. You know, like, what else are they going to do? You know, what else can they sell? You know, now they've gotten rid of their small cars. Puma and Escape was supposed to be this, this kind of idea, this looking at this story came from even sort of, I guess, during back in 2020, looking at it when Puma and Escape were new. You know, I sort of raised the point like, look, this is the opportunity for Ford here. These are new cars. You know, are Puma and Escape class leading? No, but they're not. They're certainly not at the bottom of the table there, and they're at the really at the bottom of the sales charts. They deserve to be selling better, and they don't. You know, they just can't sell anything that isn't a Ranger or an Everest.
And to your point, like we remember a few years ago, I think it was 2011, the floods in Thailand. Was it 2011? Mm-hmm. Anyway, however many years ago. Now all of these utes and SUVs, a lot of them are built in Thailand. The impact that that had on manufacturing in that region was massive.
Yeah.
So God forbid there's another natural disaster of any kind in Thailand, which is known for them, then they're kind of screwed a little bit.
I agree with Evie Ottley there. I think that I feel that Toyota, you look at the Toyota example. Look, I'm going on 2021 full sales years. Ford, Everest and Ranger combined were 82% last year. Toyota combined, when you look at Toyota's Hilux and Fortuner combined sales, they only made up just a little over 25% of their total sales.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how it should be done. And historically, Ford used to do it right because in the 80s when they were number one in Australia and the Falcon was the best-selling car in this country, they still had the Laser at number three or number four and the Telstar at number seven or number eight. They were passenger cars that supported the best-selling car or its best-selling model and were fallbacks when the best-selling model had a bad month.
Yeah,
as you said, if there's just one bad month, they are down the gurgler.
There's just it's just. I mean, again, I'm not the CEO. I'm not a CEO of any company, apart from Ottley Incorporated. You know, putting all your eggs in one basket does not make good business sense. Yeah. You know, just you know, you look at Toyota. Toyota's strength is they have high selling models in basically every segment of the market. That's why they're far and away the leader. But you look at Mazda. Mazda don't just sell CX-5s, you know. Hyundai doesn't just sell Tucson's or Santa Fe's. They have a variety of models that have appeal, you know. And you look at, I mean, a brand like Hyundai is probably a great example, and Mazda. They have reduced their product offering in recent years, but they're still selling in significant volume, and they don't have all of their sales centered around one particular variant. You know, and that's what worries me about Ford.
Oh, and by the way, just speaking of Hyundai, I mean, they don't even have a ute in the market yet. And nor does Kia. Imagine when they come in and what that effect will have on
that. Well, that's the other thing, right? You say, you know, there's a new Hilux just around the corner. Now, I'm not saying that I think the new Ranger's a great ute. You know, I think we've all driven it. It's a great ute. I don't see any reason why it shouldn't keep selling in significant volume. But there's, you know, the Amarok's going to come out, the Hilux, there'll be a new Hilux in the not too distant future. Yeah, Kia and Hyundai will probably have a one-ton ute in the
not too to mention Navara and Triton too. Navara and Triton.
Yeah, so there's no Ranger was not a huge seller, you know, a generation or two ago, was it? Like it was, you know, that was it only really exploded in popularity when the previous generation came out 10 years ago. So, you know, things change, you know. Who's to say that the new Hilux isn't just amazing and sucks in half of Ford's buyers, you know? Yeah. So I just think as a brand, they need to look to diversify.
Yeah. It's interesting because, like, we've all probably spoken to, speaking of the CEO, Andrew Berkich, they don't seem to have a problem with this. They don't seem to see having this one golden goose as an issue. They're just like, sure, we don't care. Like, we're selling a truckload of these things. It's not a problem. So whether that's just really good PR spin or they actually are genuinely like, that's fine. And we've actually got a comment. Chris, who has talked about Ford dealers. So Ford dealers were very unhappy until the Ranger and Mustang came along.
Yeah. I mean, I mean, before, you know, when, you know, Falcon obviously was in in a terminal decline before it was put out of its misery. The Territory, ironically, was a good car, but you know, they've struggled to sort of sell more than one car at a time. They're not really multitaskers, Ford. They can only really focus, you know, pardon the pun, on one particular model. Like it was Falcon, and now it's Ranger. That's what it seems to be, you know. And I think, and to be honest, I think that is belittling Ford. Like, you know, it's harsh. They I'm sure they're more than capable of selling more than one car at a time, but they just don't. They just seem to be, I don't know, there just seems to be a problem there somewhere along the line that is stopping them from maximizing their potential.
Yeah.
I think Byron, you've written a story that is going to be going live. If you're watching the podcast live, check back tomorrow. Byron's story on Ford will be going live then. If you're watching it after the fact, then go to the site now, it is live. You talk about this historically in relation to Holden in your article.
That's right. So there are precedents here. And in history, you've seen smaller brands over rely on a car, and when they go bust, then the brands go bust. I mean, the Mini in the 60s, when that ran out of steam, you know, basically Leyland disappeared. But I mean, Holden relied too heavily on the Commodore, and before that the Kingswood, and before that the Special and the Premier. And even though they did have a strong supporting lineup at times, and even to the end, they had, you know, Colorado coming through, and the Captiva was fairly popular. The car company was always known as the Commodore Car Company. Well, particularly, you know, from the 80s onwards, and that is a lesson for Ford to heed, because Holden, once they seemed to put all their eggs in the Commodore basket, starting with the VE Commodore, when they made the decision in the early 2000s, look, we're going to export this car. We're going to have all these different variants. We didn't see there was going to be an SUV variant. There was going to be all drive variants. There was going to be a Monaro replacement based on the Commodore Coupe, which was previewed as a concept car, and I think in 2007 or 2008. But they all that all disappeared because large car sales dried up because of SUVs, and then the global financial crisis hit, and the export market suddenly vanished. There was no Pontiac to take Holden product. Chevrolet was crippled, and GM went to Chapter 11 bankruptcy. Those things were outside Ford's Holden's control in the 2000s. They were left with a car that they overinvested in a market that was diminishing. The writing was on the wall. Look, we're going to give Ford some credit here, because Ford was kind of going to go down that route in the late 2000s. They were going to develop a new rear drive platform that was going to underpin an American large car and the next generation Mustang that ended up being the 2014 Mustang. But Ford saw the writing on the wall. They decided, no, we're going to cancel this platform, and Ford Australia instead is going to develop the T6 Ranger platform. And that, of course, saved Ford Australia, as far as I'm concerned. Holden had no such luck. I think General Motors left them out to dry, and by 2020, the plug was pulled. Commodore sales evaporated, and when they thought they could put a Commodore badge on the Opel Insignia, in a car that was front wheel drive and four cylinder with an all wheel drive option, of course, and a V6 engine option as well, Australians just went, no, that's not a V8, that's not a Ute, that's not rear wheel drive, forget it, that's an imposter. But
they also didn't want it. It was a sedan in an SUV world, you know. It was not. You're right. I mean, look, Ford. You know, got the timing right, and the Utes are running hot right now. But things change, right? Like that's sort of the point. Is, you know, if we'd have said 10 years ago that, you know, one of Ford's biggest sellers would be a $70,000 plus high performance off road focused Ute, you'd probably look at us like we had two heads. Yeah. But it's great. But I mean, you know, there's no guarantee that in 10 years that's what people are going to want to buy. You know, we're seeing a flood of electric cars come in. It may be that, look, maybe, yeah, we're seeing governments finally start to act in Australia and change. So putting all your eggs in one particular basket just doesn't make sense from a business point of view.
Yeah. And it's the rich model mix that you mentioned that you didn't, that needs to be pointed out as well. Ford makes a lot of money on those Wildtracks and Raptors. and Everest Titaniums and Platinums that they sell
or
they get orders for. But, you know, that will really affect the bottom line once they start falling from popularity, or, you know, new arrivals come in and, you know, the spotlight is shone away from these cars, because that will eventually happen, because that's just the way fashion works and it's the way, you know, the market works. So
I think as well, we need to, like, you know, I don't want this to be like a forward bashing exercise, because I think we can all agree that what they've done in Australia and the expertise that has gone into this entire program is phenomenal. And we should be proud as a country that we kind of have this capability there. And as we've all said, like, I've not driven the new Ranger. I believe it's very good. The previous one was like segment leading, really.
Tim, it's the best. I think it's the best truck in the world.
Don't say truck. Don't say truck.
Well, it's the best ute. It's the best pickup. It's whatever.
Truck. He's getting He's getting the American audience.
No, but it is a truck.
But you know what? It's great.
It's a motor frame chassis truck with a bed on the back. It's a truck.
Yeah. I agree with Byron. I think it's fantastic.
It's a bloody truck.
Yes. Yeah. And you're right. Like, and I think the thing I think that frustrates me when I look at this is the fact that Ford has great cars. You know, Ford has these options that they could potentially get to, right? Like, I mean, the Fiesta and Focus, it's a shame they're going, but cars like the one behind me,
Bronco.
Bronco Sport. Yes. That's a Bronco Sport. Now, a lot of the hype is around Bronco and the comeback of Bronco, and Bronco's great, and it's a cool thing. But I went to America this year, saw the things in the metal for the first time. The Bronco Sport is fantastic. The Bronco Sport is the car they need. You know, the Bronco Sport is a compact SUV that's funky. It's different. It's got a Bronco name, but it's really like more like a Kia Seltos rival. You know,
are you saying it's an escape in drag? Is that what you're saying? Well, it's almost an escape in drag.
Well, but it's I would argue it's probably a size between. It would probably actually slot, and it does in America. It slots neatly between Puma and Escape. It gives you a three model SUV, small SUV lineup with a point of difference. You know, no one really sells that, right? Since the X-Trail went, you know, into a more like lost its sort of chunkiness and became more of a soft roader, no one really sells them. But I think there is an argument to be made. I mean, you look at the popularity of things like the new Defender, people do like a tough SUV.
Yeah.
They want something a bit different. Mm. You know, like Ford has other cars like, you know, dare I say, Mustang Mach-E, you know, like that is an exciting car. Like that has huge potential in Australia. You know, they already built that in right-hand drive. Now, Ford Australia hasn't confirmed it. I think it's probably a pretty good chance it's coming here in the not-too-distant future. And so maybe that helps turn the brand around. You know, certainly having, you know, the new Mustang, which is coming in September, we'll see in September, and then I assume it'll come here sometime next year, hopefully. Look, that's great. That'll be two great new models that Ford could have. But right now they need that, because right now, you know, like irony is, you know, I wrote a piece again for Cars Guide sort of suggesting that Ford has this option with stuff like Bronco and Bronco Sport and even like the Maverick Ute to really position themselves as Ford, you know, the adventure brand. You know, the adventure lifestyle brand, you know, give themselves a point of difference. And instead they're becoming the Ford commercial vehicle company, you know, like, cause you know, Byron and I were talking to Andrew Berkey at Ford and said, you know, the next big model he's really excited about is Transit. You know, Transit is the future. And like, great, you'll sell Transits, but like, and that's it's good for the bottom line, but is it good for the brand? Like, is it building the brand? Like, you know, like their first electric vehicle announcement in Australia is the e-Transit. Not exactly a Tesla Model 3 rival, exactly, you know, a Polestar 2 or an Ioniq 5. No. Like, it's
fun fact though, you can fit all those cars in the back of one.
It's true. They have talked about obviously a wider rollout of electric vehicles, and I think you're probably spot on. We can all agree that the Mach-E is probably going to come here. But Byron, I think there are some other models. Obviously, just talked about the Maverick, but what about the Explorer? Do you think that could work here?
Well, yeah, that's a great example there, Tim, because the Explorer like the Toyota Kluger it competes against in the States, is an American-made seven-seater SUV. The key difference there is that car is actually on a rear-wheel drive platform. It comes with hybrids, and it has performance versions such as the ST. It's not built in right-hand drive. And it's and that is, of course, the big sticking point, as is the sticking point with the Ford Maverick, the small car-based ute. Both of those vehicles would be ideal for Australia.
Yeah.
The market and the Explorer, which is nothing like the Explorer we used to get, that 4x4 thing that that O.J. Simpson used to drive. Was that? No, that was a Bronco.
No, that was a Bronco.
Anyway, that was a Bronco. Yeah, that's right. He probably promoted him though. But anyway, going back to the Explorer, that would be that would hit the heart of the market. That would go up against Santa Fe's and Palisades, and it has what Stephen said earlier. It's got that kind of rugged look about it that I think, you know, the market is gravitating towards something that's adventure and lifestyle. It's a great size and it's dynamic. It has Ford DNA dynamicism that which we appreciate as motoring journalists and people as owners appreciate when they want a car that's involving to drive. The Maverick, interestingly, is Ford North America's replacement for the Focus in that it's an inexpensive, urban-based, obviously car-derived front-wheel drive or all-wheel drive hybrid. Now, yes, it's an unproven market in this country, but, you know, as Australians, we have a history of having small car-based utes such as the Subaru Brumby. I think this car would... It might be a slow burn, but I think it would be one of those cars that would grow and become a pillar for Ford Australia.
It could be a pioneer.
It could be a pioneer.
You know, like Hyundai could do it with the Santa Cruz. You know, they have their sort of Tucson-based Santa Cruz, which is, from my understanding, it's proving a success in the US market. Yeah. But
the Maverick is selling like hotcakes and other cliches.
It's a good looking thing. I don't disagree with you. I think it was but to me it gets back to, I think this is where you maybe the buck stops at Ford Australia is they're not in a position, or they're not, you know, they're just not able to make the case to Ford America. I mean, you know. So Bronco Sport and Maverick, correct me if I'm wrong, Brian, they're still based on the Escape platform, right? They're still fundamentally the same platform?
Well, Bronco fundamentally, the Escape is on the, the Maverick is on the Focus, the small. I mean, they're all C1 platform.
But they're all car-based. I mean, the Bronco, for crying out loud, is based on the T6 platform.
That's right.
Like somehow Ford in the US engineered right-hand drive out of it. You know, like it's not like it had to be engineered into it.
Yeah.
They've deliberately avoided doing it. It's
which
like,
is nuts.
Like, so how, like, there's, I mean, that's one huge obstacle. Like, how did Ford Australia get to the point where we go, well, can we have it? Because we developed it. No, you don't get it. We're taking it now. You don't get to play with it anymore.
Down to competition, because the Everest is so strong here. My understanding was they didn't want to have that kind of internal competition. Yeah.
Yes,
maybe, but
they're different. They're different.
But they're
vehicles.
Exactly. 100%. Very different. And I think the argument they make is, oh well, you know, they don't sell many. Jeep doesn't sell many Wranglers. Well, no, but I mean, you're Ford. I mean, you should be able to.
Yeah.
You should have the confidence you're going to outsell Jeep, which, to be honest, you know, has struggled for the last 10 years in this market.
But to your point, Stephen, I think Australian consumers won't look at a Bronco Sport and go, oh, this is hardcore like a Wrangler.
No.
They're going to look at it and go, hang on, this is more suitable to everyday driving, unlike a Wrangler, because the Wrangler is such a specific function vehicle. Therefore, I could drive it on the to work or pick up the kids during the weekday and then use it for its light off-road duty capabilities on the weekends. To me, it's a no-brainer.
Just quickly, boys, we've got some great comments. So Stuart Marler's mentioned, so in other words, Ford Australia has problems. The US guys have a full competitive range, just not made right-hand drive and imported here. And Planes, Trains and Dogs and Cars says there's heaps of Ford models made in China. Perhaps the plan is to bring in some of them. I mean, can we see that happening in the future?
Yes, of course. We're a global market these days. And Chinese cars are now accepted. There's no real stigma attached to their quality or their reliability, I think. I mean, the Polestar cars are out of China. as most of the Volvo range now, period, for Australia. And obviously, as cost pressures increase and volume demands dictate, you know, like big orders, it's a natural. And I don't think consumers will care in the end, will they? People don't care that their iPhones are from China. People don't care. Everything's
half
from China.
Of Volvo's range is from China. It's, you know, like that's, it's just, you know, MG.
That's a great point, Tim. Yes.
Thank you.
Even though I just made that point a second ago.
Sorry. I've concentrated on these things.
I heard you, Byron. I was listening.
Thank you.
Sorry, it's been a long day with you two. Look, I do want to say, though, I wonder if some of the blame of some of the models that maybe haven't succeeded for Ford in Australia, where Everest and Ranger has, like how much can we blame, you know, their marketing department? Like, you know, I think we'd all probably agree that the Focus, the full Focus range was a fabulous car, like the wagon, even to the base model. I remember I drove it when it launched. I was like, this is such a good car. Yet I don't think I've ever seen a Ford Focus ad, like in that current generation. I haven't seen any promotion of that vehicle. They just didn't give it a chance. Yes, Otley, you're right. Cars diminishing. But don't you think there needs to be some responsibility on promoting these models that are already not top sellers?
And the dealers have a responsibility as well, not just the marketing team.
I've had online advertising, like YouTube videos and things like that. You'll get I've had pop-up ads of like very specific ads. And that kind of does.
Are they from Russia and are they made?
No, like very specific. Like if you're thinking of buying a Honda CR-V 2-liter VTI 2-wheel drive, why don't you try instead buy this Escape 2-liter? You know, and they don't strike me as that they're not like any other automotive ad I see on TV or online. They're just it's a very hyper specific targeted kind of spot, which is different. Maybe their data says it works, but
it's passive and reactionary. Like, Ford should be progressive and bold. Is that where you're getting at?
I guess. I mean, I would argue they should try something different, because what's that saying about insanity? Just doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. Because that's really where we're at. Like, you know,
we don't want another Enduro situation.
Yeah, that was a treasure. I drove the what are they called? The Edge in the US. I drove the Edge ST in the States a few years ago and loved it. You know, and it was not a red hot performance SUV by any stretch of the imagination, but it had like a turbocharged V6. It was punchy. It looked good. And, you know, again, my argument is it probably could have come here like the Focus and the Fiesta as a bit of a flagship, or like a hero model, something that's going to drag people into showrooms. And then they might have selected the cheaper, you know, more sensible version, but there was never any hype around Enduro. They just sort of, it came out and it went quite quickly, and it was just like it never really had a chance. Like, it was bizarre.
Yeah.
Back to the comments very quickly. Sorry, Byron. Completely taking a model, this is from Zamuro, completely taking a model out for sale makes no sense. Just make the STs limited order per year. Are they bringing in the Puma ST instead? We talked about this briefly before. Does anyone have any intel on that?
I have not heard anything to that effect.
No. But you know what? There are EV vehicles coming from Ford. They've said we're not talking about the Transit and, you know, the Mach-E. I'm talking about there will be passenger car sized EVs.
Yes.
In collaboration with Volkswagen that will be coming. And there probably will be performance versions of those. So this won't be the end of the Ford Performance line. And Ford Performance is a division in itself that produces the Raptor and a whole bunch of other vehicles around the world. So fingers crossed, we will get EVs that are high performance. Fingers crossed, we get the Puma ST. But right now, it's just pretty much Ranger.
As Tim mentioned, we're not trying to bash Ford here.
No.
And I think, you know, Byron makes a good point. There are these cars that are potentially coming. Nothing's been confirmed, but the potential for Ford in the future, particularly an electric future with, these electric vehicles they're developing with Volkswagen, you know, the similar platform that the ID3 and ID4 are based on. You know, in addition to the likes of the Mach-E, they've got F-150 coming next year. F-150 Lightning is probably, you know, eventually destined for here. you know, there is hope, you know, there is this, there is hope on the horizon and hope, but, you know, they've really got to get those cars here and then sell them in, in, you know, like it can't just be another Focus ST or like you say, Focus all over again, but certainly there is, there's certainly potential and hope in the future.
And look, on that note, we will have to wrap up the Ford conversation. We've got a few other things to get through, but thank you, boys, for your insights on that front. And we're going to try a little new thing this week. It is a weekly news wrap, so looking at some of the biggest news stories this week. And, of course, if you go to carsguide.com.au, you can find all of these stories and more online right now. I'll kick it off because I'm the host and I can do what I want. We had VFAX, which is Australia's new vehicle sales data lob this week. Not a huge amount of massive surprises. As you guys know, the chip shortage and the supply issues are really having an impact. So the sales are like this, like 1 week a company's going great guns and the next minute's in the doldrums. Mazda really down. They're back to number two. They were pushed to number four last month. They are back, but they're still down by 11%. Hyundai and Kia, Hyundai have been down all year. They have made quite a dramatic comeback, and I think they're selling a lot of Tucsons. Kia doing really, really well. Interestingly, MG down by 9%, which we haven't seen much kind of decline from them since really they started pushing the market really hard.
But their pricing has jumped up, and I think that might be something.
Well, because their supply is pretty good. So there's some reason there for sure. Mm.
This is a question actually I raised with them, I believe, earlier this year. Is they don't have a whole heck of a lot coming either. Like they've got the cars that they've had, the ZS and the HS and the 3, you know, like they've sold a lot of those in the last 18 months. Mm. They might have run out of people to sell them to. They might have, you know, there's a limited amount of people that really want to buy an MG SUV or small car. Yeah. And, you know, you got to find something new.
Mm.
Absolutely. Yeah, so look, year to date, we are sales are down 4.5%. Check out the full story online if you want all of that detail. Byron Matthew Darkus,
a little bit of
Mitsubishi news.
That's right. So, look, Mitsubishi's ASX is a perennial favourite amongst fleet buyers and people looking for a bargain 2007 Lancer-based car, which obviously means it's getting old. The next generation model will be unveiled shortly, so keep an eye on carsguide.com.au for breaking news there. The thing is, it's not going to be what the current ASX is. It's going to be based on it will be based on Nissan, Renault, Mitsubishi Alliance, global big segment platform. I suspect it's going to be smaller. It's going to be built at a Renault factory, so probably out of Europe, but then Renault also does have a factory in Korea with its Samsung affiliate. But it will be probably a lot more like the Nissan Juke and the rather excellent Renault Captur, in that it's going to be smaller. It's going to have probably a turbo petrol engine rather than that, you know, that big lusty 2 liter and 2.4 liter unit that the current A6 has. And it's going to be a very eco-focused, urban-based, probably premium-ish.
Well, that's the big question, though, Byron. Is it coming here? Do we know that?
Well, the A6 brand value is extremely high. Mitsubishi has a history of resting nameplates and then reintroducing them often on cars that are nothing alike. One that brings to mind is, of course, the Mirage. The old Mirage was a classic, and the one that was just discontinued was Putrid. So
surely they have to have ASX, right?
Yeah, you'd think that.
I guess the big question, though, is if you bring it onto a newer platform, and the success of the current car is arguably built on the fact that it is so old, they've amortized their cost. They're probably machinery, so it won't be cheap. And it's really been led by success has been built on the back of its price.
But fun fact about the ASX, it was meant to have been replaced by the Eclipse Cross, but ASX sales were so strong that they still went ahead with its replacement and pushed that slightly further up market. But they have the same wheelbase and they share essentially the same components underneath, bar the engine. And of course, the body and the interior is completely different. But Mitsubishi doesn't owe us another AE6. It essentially is here with the Eclipse Cross. So what this would be a new type of Mitsubishi. That's the bottom line. This would be a little SUV Mitsubishi. Something we have not seen since the demise of the brilliant but underrated Mini Pajero. Well, remember
the
IO? IO, the Pajero EO, that little Pininfarina design classic from the late 90s. Great thing. And FYI, future classic. You heard it here
classic,
first.
He says. Now, look, moving on to the very last news story. Stephen Otley, what is happening with the Land Cruiser 70 series?
Yeah, for some reason, I get the bad news. so the 70 series, brace yourself, Land Cruiser lovers, because this 70 series is officially not on sale anymore. They have, I believe the phrase they've used is paused orders due to, quote-unquote, extended wait times. And I think we've heard some examples of it being up to 4 years, which, to be fair, is a pretty long wait time. I'd maybe wait for a, you know, that's typically the kind of wait lit times you hear for the, you know, some sort of limited edition Ferrari hypercar, like, as opposed to a 70 series Land Cruiser. So, I mean, it's amazing. It's still, I mean, it's still going strong and it's still demand. I guess it's the classic, you know, 2022 problem of supply chain crisis, semiconductor shortage. Although I don't know, does it not predate semiconductors?
I think it might.
Yeah.
You know what? It shocks me how many people still ask me, oh, when are you going to get a 79 series for you to drive? My 16-year-old nephew asked me that yesterday. Oh. He goes, oh, yeah, you've got a Land Cruiser 300 series outside of Sahara, but I don't care about that. What about the 79 series? That thing is enduring. And if they're to say they're pausing it, maybe they will restart production. Why wouldn't they? It's been in production since 1984 or 83 or whatever. So
I think the point Toyota tried to make was, you know, it's certainly open-ended. You know, they want it. They want it. They need to clear a backlog. There's a, there's obviously, if it's blowing out, you know, I mean, I would imagine that it is multiple years, right? We've heard wait times for RAV4 blowing out 18 months. So I would imagine it's significantly more than that. And so, clear the backlog, you know, while you can, but then, like, you know, you can bring it back.
Maybe Toyota should just go on holidays for the next year. Like, stop making cars. Everyone, just take the rest of the they're the richest company in the world, pretty much. Take the rest of the year off. Let the orders get, you know, and then start again.
We'll see. Look, we've got one more comment. Deatomizer says, 4 year wait is nothing. The 70 series looks like it's from the 80s. I would argue it looks like it's from the 60s, but
just like you.
It's all in the eye of the hole. Exactly
just
right.
Like you.
But look, with that, we have come to the end of the show. Byron Matthiodakis, Stephen Otley, thank you both very much for being on today.
Always thank you, Timmy.
Excellente. Did somebody call me Timmy? I will.
I called you Tammy.
No, okay. Well, that's okay.
After Tammy Faye Baker.
Thanks, Notch James.
Thank you. Yes. Thank you to production megastar Brett Sullivan and publishing guru Matthew Pritchard. If you enjoyed this, please feel free to subscribe to the Cars Guide YouTube channel. We're also on Instagram and Facebook, so check us out there. Or you can email us at comments@carsguide.com.au. RIP, Focus and Fiesta. James Clear will be back next week. So until then, take care on the road and thank you for tuning in.